All right. Welcome to the Compass live stream, the first of many hopefully entertaining educational streams. For the first stream, we have some of the best minds at the state and federal level of U.S. policymaking talking about maybe not our favorite topic, but definitely an important one with Congress putting miners in the crosshairs of a new infrastructure bill. Whether this development sort of happened intentionally or not, it's a little more than unnerving for the industry, and we'd all love to see that language significantly revised or cut altogether. So today, along with Will Foxley, my colleague, we're joined by Lee Bratcher, president of the Texas Blockchain Council, Perry Ann Boring, president of the Chamber of Digital Commerce, and Roger Brown, a member of the Chamber's Tax Task Force Committee. A little bit of a mouthful there. All three of you, thank you so much for coming on the stream. I'm excited to talk with you guys, hear what you've learned, what you've been working on pretty intensely over the past just a couple of days. Really appreciate your time.
Yeah, great to be here.
So
before we jump in, I kind of want to set the framing for this discussion by looking at how this bill is discussed in mainstream media. There's a sort of a disconnect between the representation of the bill being about like taxes on crypto and then the actual details of the bill that are causing a little bit of headache with regards to text and language in the bill covering miners. Damien, if you can throw up a little clip there, there's this interesting bit on CNBC that sort of shows
of the infrastructure.
Shows the disconnect there.
The latest draft of the infrastructure bill includes raising $30 billion a year from cracking down on crypto tax evasion. I think it is evasion. Robert Frank joins us now with more. If you don't talk about it and don't pay it, that's not avoidance. That's evasion.
That's right. Yeah, that is evasion. And that's what they're going after here. The crypto industry already fighting to remove part of this infrastructure bill that would crack down on crypto taxes. The draft bill includes new reporting rules for crypto traders that would raise an estimated $28 to $30 billion over 10 years from identifying those tax evaders. Now, right now, very few exchanges actually report taxable transactions to the IRS. Since the laws right now are very vague, the new bill would impose tighter rules on businesses handling crypto. They would have to report the purchase prices and the sales prices for crypto sellers. Secondly, it would expand the reporting requirements for brokers. So it would apply to, and this is important language, any business that facilitates the transfer of digital assets. So that is much broader. Just broker would also require any digital asset transactions of $10,000 or more to be reported to the IRS. Now, the Blockchain Association saying these rules pose a, quote, imminent threat to the budding crypto industry here in America. They say the rules could hit crypto miners and maybe even investors. The industry also arguing that tax evasion is not widespread and a crackdown won't raise the expected revenue. But IRS Chief Charles Rettig saying in April that cryptocurrencies are one reason that uncollected taxes now total up to $1 trillion a year. Joe?
So I think it's fair to say that no one is really arguing that taxes shouldn't be paid. Like the tax provisions in the bill at a high level aren't problematic. I don't want to steal Roger's thunder because I know he's going to get into some details in a little bit about why they are problematic sort of in the weeds. But paying taxes is good. The problem comes from the inclusion of miners, which sort of that clip alluded to. To kick us off, Perry Ann, can you just give us like high level summary of like what's problematic in this bill, where it came from, what the language is covering, and why it's a little bit of a headache for miners?
Yeah, so I do think it is a very disingenuous posture for anyone to take to say that we're a community of tax evaders. People are actively and purposefully out of compliance. I don't think that's the case, and I don't think that's a very honest way to talk about this situation. The IRS has not provided guidance to our community, at least comprehensive guidance, since 2014, the first time the IRS weighed in on Bitcoin and digital assets was in 2014 when they said for tax purposes they would be treated as property. Back in 2014, which has now been years ago. They also opened up a public comment period, and they received over 300 comments across the United States from all sorts of people and corporations asking to clarify a lot of things, just basic questions about how to comply with these requirements. And the IRS has refused to share really much detail at all or issue meaningful guidance to help people and businesses and other lawful participants in this space how to comply. There's also numerous companies and organizations, including us at the Chamber of Digital Commerce, who have submitted numerous formal requests to IRS asking for more detailed information around the questions our businesses and the people we represent have about how to comply. So I don't think that's fair to say. I think a lot of this is political posturing, how the whole crypto industry is now funding this massive and huge part of the infrastructure bill is quite unbelievable to me. I don't think this is an appropriate process. I think the IRS should have provided this guidance a long time ago when people asked for it. And if they did, I don't think we would be in this situation today. There are definitely some questions on, did the IRS have the statutory authority to do so? Even the IRS's own inspector general has criticized the IRS for the lack of clarity on regulations that apply to digital assets and cryptocurrencies. So this is not a new conversation. This is a conversation we've been having at the chamber for many, many years. And this lack of regulatory clarity has caused a huge amount of headwinds just in the past couple of days. And this is a persistent theme throughout the federal government. It's not just Treasury and the IRS who haven't provided regulatory clarity. We've had this issue with the SEC, the Securities and Exchange Commission, too, where there's a lot of confusion and just questions open about which tokens are within the SEC's jurisdiction and which ones are not. So this isn't just the IRS who really hasn't provided the information businesses need to comply. But yeah, it's not appropriate to just turn to this industry and say, we don't want to abide by the laws. That's not true.
I would echo what Perianne said, and I liken it to the following. We have a tradition in the U.S. tax system, basically to when we interact with an exchange or we invest and do some economic activities, there's information reporting that gets done. And whether you trade stocks and bonds, whether you're an independent consultant, whether you have rental property and you pay your plumber, there's an information reporting regime that goes on all of that. And then the person who's doing that economic activity files a 1099, various alphabetic numbers on the back of it, 1099 miss, B, K, you choose it. And you just take that, give it to your accountant, and he or she then does what they're going to do, or you upload it into your TurboTax or other software platform, and you do it and you comply. There's lots of uncertainty around how these rules apply with crypto. There's also some certainty in certain areas, but uncertainty in others. And as the system grew up, people are not apt to do a forensic exercise around tax compliance, where they're going to go and figure out whether they're trading on six or seven platforms and the exchanges themselves have crappy records. How do you do that forensic exercise? So in reality, what people will just, you know, I think, yes, people were realizing that crypto is not a special asset class that you can engage in and have tax-free income. It's not like a muni bond. But I think it's just a practical matter is that we have humans that inherently have a tradition of relying on a 1099, and it just hasn't happened. It's sort of like, I think the Ubers of the world and that model growing up where Uber kind of didn't go for permission every time it was going into a new city. They just enacted in business and worried about the regulation later. I think this kind of is the same thing where the ecosystem grew up, advanced to the regulation, and they were focused on doing business for the sake of doing business with all the great goals of crypto, not with the goals of facilitating any kind of tax evasion. And then people who were interested in the ecosystem and transacting, just not taking the extra step in the forensic exercise to go ahead and try to figure out how to comply. Congress now is stepping in In that light, I actually worked at the IRS for almost a decade, so I'm very familiar with the regulation writing process, and it's a lengthy one because they don't want to get it wrong, because getting it wrong is far worse than being slow. So they've taken their time, I think, to go as far as they can. I think to be subject to even more criticism if they put out rules and got it so wrong, so they tanked markets. So, you know, rumor is that there are mature drafts of information reporting provisions. Hopefully they will not tank markets. Hopefully they'll be thoughtful, reflecting the time they took to draft, and not in effect, again, harming taxpayers or putting some kind of technological burden on exchanges that would be impossible to meet. So I'll stop talking for a second.
No, that makes sense. Yeah, I mean, the IRS has been slow and now Congress is getting it wrong. But hopefully we don't have the same people going slow and getting it wrong at the same time, I guess, is kind of what I'm hearing from you. Lee, any high-level thoughts on the text of the bill before we get into some more detailed conversation?
Sure. I think what Perianne and Roger said is spot on. One of the biggest concerns that we all have is the optics of this, which is terrible. We already have talent and companies going overseas, Switzerland, Liechtenstein, Singapore, you name it. We've got companies in our industry association that are Texans, that are U.S. citizens, that are opening businesses overseas, that are tuning into our calls from their offices in Liechtenstein or in the EU, where they have more clarity, which is blowing my mind. How does the EU have more clarity than the U.S. regulators? It's just, it doesn't make any sense. And so in this area in particular, in Bitcoin mining, Texas has worked very hard to cultivate an image as being really friendly towards Bitcoin miners. And we really are, for a lot of reasons pertaining to low energy costs and regulatory environment. For the federal government to come in and with a stroke of a pen, put that at risk is very concerning for lawmakers in Texas. And, the bill itself is not going to raise the amount of revenue, the $28 billion that they think it is, because that they're assuming that these people are, that the brokers are not paying taxes at all. We have to assume that the vast majority of players in this space are paying their fair share of taxes based upon the returns that we're seeing. So I really don't expect the $28 billion estimate to come even close to the amount of revenue that this bill could raise.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense. I think if Damien, if you can throw up my screen here really quick. Lee, you tweeted just a bit ago that some of the problematic language in the bill around the crypto industry is softening. Common sense is prevailing. Absent from this tweet is any sort of like victory there. But can you just, back to you, Lee, can you tell us a little bit about the conversations you've had, the progression between like the first draft of this bill that we saw, sort of the shock reaction, and then the progress to constantly push for more refined, less obtrusive, broad stroke language that has miners and other people understandably worried?
Yeah, I think we're all kind of looking in the last half hour or so at this amendment that Senator Lummis and others have put forward. And the crucial turning point for me was when Senator Portman and his staff announced that for legislative guidance that miners were not intended to be included. But why would he not be willing to include that in the actual draft? And so I think Perianne could probably speak to the progress of where the amendment is, Senator Lummis's amendment. Even if we can't get this, I think that to have Portman's staff going on the record and saying that is helpful, but we need to push this amendment across the finish line. We've got, 24 to 48 hours to do so. And so I'll yield the floor to Perianne to talk more about that.
So, yeah, it's been a pretty incredible past couple of days. The original text of the bill was definitely quite concerning. The chamber, along with our tax task force and a number of other advocates and companies across the country, worked all throughout the weekend to narrow that definition down as much as absolutely possible. The definition that came out of that, it was, it's still relatively vague. So the biggest concern that we have is the definition of broker. And it's, even today, it is broad enough that it's ambiguous if miners and node operators and validators, those who are staking digital assets and the protocols themselves would be required to issue 1099s. Oh yeah, there's the bill right there. It's four pages out of that huge stack of paper there. Only about four pages pertain to us. I previously worked in Congress as a legislative analyst. And anytime I saw bills like that, I just automatically said, vote no, because it's that big and that complicated. There absolutely has to be all sorts of things in there that either people don't understand or don't make sense. And there's a lot of things in this bill that don't make sense. So the legislative language where it was officially offered on Sunday night. So it was posted on the Senate.gov website. That's what's called the base text. And now we have an amendment process that's opened, and hundreds of amendments have already been offered. You can track them on the Senate's website. So there's lots and lots and lots of senators around the country that are making, offering all sorts of tweaks to this bill. Senator Cruz put one up today to strike this entire provision, the entire thing. And then Senator Wyden, Senator Toomey, and Senator Lummis provision, which would change the rules of construction at the very bottom. And those rules does make explicitly clear that miners would not be included in the scope of this bill. So that clarity is absolutely a good thing. The other thing that's, possible is to get legislative history. We are, very confident we will be able to obtain legislative history. An amendment is a much larger feat. So if the amendment does not pass, we still have the opportunity to get legislative history.
Lee, Roger, Perry, I'm really excited for you guys to jump on with us today. Thanks for taking the time in the middle of everything going on as well. Kind of noticing that there's some political lines being drawn here. And of course, like Bitcoin to a degree as a technology is apolitical, but it's living in this space that is very political. And over the years, we've seen just people on either side of the aisle be interested in Bitcoin, pros or cons for that. But right now, it kind of seems like we're seeing some of the stones fall where they may lay for the next decade or so. So for example, Senator Warren came out with some very strong rhetoric against Bitcoin and the cryptocurrency industry in general. On the other side, you have Senator Lummis, who is very pro-Bitcoin and trying to get Bitcoin miners to come to her state. So I was wondering if any of you guys can speak to that as much as possible right now. I know it's kind of a decisive topic to delve into, but there does seem to be some pro warriors for like the Bitcoin side, and then some people who are just really antagonists and against the space. And I'm wondering to what degree that is drawn, or you're seeing it on Cap Hill across political lines.
I'm the kind of person that just doesn't take no for an answer. So I've been doing this for going on a decade now. And when we first opened the chamber, which was 7 years ago, there were very few people who were willing to even learn about Bitcoin, who were even interested in talking to us. Today, we have champions all across government. For those who still don't get it and who haven't taken the time to really understand how this technology works, I am hopeful that as we continue to go up the S-curve and more Americans start owning Bitcoin and other cryptocurrencies, that their elected representatives will be more open to taking the time to understand it better. We did a congressional briefing a couple years ago on AML topics. That's another area where people just have a lot of fears. Bitcoin and cryptocurrencies have been associated with illicit activity, and that's gotten a lot of media coverage. And people have real concerns about that. And we brought in a former official from the DOJ just to help people understand kind of that side of the equation better. And this quote just has stuck with me throughout the years, but he said, I've met a lot of people who who are skeptics of Bitcoin. And I've met a lot of people who know a lot about Bitcoin. I've never met somebody who knows a lot about Bitcoin and is a skeptic. So I do believe that education continues to be our biggest tool. And you mentioned Senator Elizabeth Warren. She's been quite critical. That's very clear. But Elizabeth Warren has spent her entire career advocating for the consumer. She was one of the architects of the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. She has been a huge champion for diversity. She's also very big on transparency. So as you may know, she's called on corporations to share more information about things like emissions, and other things that she feels like should be disclosed publicly. These are all things that blockchain can help happen. So I think the best thing we can be doing as a community is not going on crypto Twitter and shunning and saying negative things about people who don't get it. The best thing we can do is educate these people and inspire them to want to take the time to learn about this amazing technology that we all care about. And we're at anywhere from 15 to 20% of American households own some form of cryptocurrency today. As those adoption curves continue to increase and more people join this ecosystem, I think our elected officials' stance will reflect that as well.
Well, going on Twitter and making fun of people is actually kind of a fun hobby of mine. But if Perianne thinks it'll help us get
specifically, sorry.
I guess I can dial it back if it's better for the legislative process. Lee, the chat says Texas is always threatening to secede, but is Bitcoin going to be the straw that breaks the camel's back? Speaking on a state level of legislative activity, do you see sort of a similar dynamic to what Perianne just described, where some people are really for it and some people just kind of don't understand it yet, but there's really the two don't really ever meet?
I love that quote. Yeah, people are for it or they don't understand it. Those are the kind of the two options, right? So we use the legislative toolkit, the Digital Chamber developed a couple of years ago, and Perianne and her team were gracious enough to allow us to make that a Texas version of that. And so we amended it and we printed it and we gave it to every legislator and staffer so that they could read about the technology. And it led to us being able to pass two critical bills in Texas that were signed by Governor Abbott just a few weeks ago, House Bill 1576 and House Bill 4474. 4474 made Texas the second state in the country next to Wyoming to define virtual currencies, define what it means to control a virtual currency like Bitcoin or Ether, and to define what it means to perfect a security interest in a virtual currency. So I won't dive into what all that means right now. I will say we have to keep this bipartisan, though. There's a lot of pressure to say, oh, some of the Democrats were against this, so let's just say this is a Republican thing. This is not a Republican thing. This is an American innovation that we could harness for all Americans. If Senator Warren were on this live stream with us, we would not be. She's brilliant. She'd be the most brilliant person on the live stream, by the way. And we would be trying to convince her and to demonstrate to her how this technology can bank the unbanked, how this technology can provide financial services to folks that, the traditional banking system has not found it profitable to do so for centuries. So she just hasn't looked into it closely enough, or there's somebody on her staff that's perhaps slanting the information that she's getting. So that I'm very convinced of that. And I'm very convinced that we need to make this bipartisan as well.
I would offer that I think there's a way to view this in a positive light, this legislation. And I hope I'm not the person standing up saying the king has no clothes. Effectively, what it's doing is saying digital assets are just like stock, bonds, and cash. And those who transact in it are going to be subject to the same rules. And if there are some people in the universe, in the cryptoverse, that believe crypto should have no regulation, government shall write no rules affecting crypto. And I don't think that that is going to be the norm. I think the power of the pen exists with their legislatures. This is the trend all around the world, quite frankly. So in most established economies, so you take that as the truth, the given, that that's what's going to happen. The question is then, how do you have sensible regulation and treat crypto like stock, bonds, commodities, and cash, and other traditional financial assets? My personal view, and the companies that I've worked for have always believed in that vision. And that's where I come out. So with that, this statute, to say that there is going to be the same kind of information reporting that exists for traditional assets, for transfers of cash, is along that lines. Where, however, that there is concern is that you don't want to thwart innovation and needlessly harm that. So when you're saying miners, you're defining a broker. A broker is a crypto exchange, a stocks and bonds exchange, et cetera. To put a miner in that is not correct. To put a validator in that is not correct. To put a custodian of crypto is also not correct, because they're not now traditionally in these broker rules because they're not exchanges. So it's correct that the Wyden Amendment and others are pushing back to say, I get the policy. I get what the government is trying to do. Okay, we agree that people should pay tax on crypto because their gains or their other income, because they're, how the tax code defines income is very broad, and certainly gains, ordinary income or cap gain, are items of income that are taxable. There's no exemption for that. If you disagree with that, then that's a different conversation you should have with somebody else, because then you just don't understand the way the tax system works. And if you want to dive it from a religious perspective, then go talk religion with somebody. But if you take that as it's taxable income when you have a gain, and then you should be reporting for the intermediaries, that's normal. Don't harm, however, those who are not intermediaries, those who are directly engaging in it, those who are not necessarily forced to do KYC at the level of the broker. You still, however, have to think about what other provisions, because there are other information provisions that could come in and require information reporting, for the same way that Perianne, as head of the digital chamber, if she hires a consultant and pays that consultant in cash, she's going to give the consultant a 1099 miss, or 1099 NEC under the new rules. However, if she pays that person in Bitcoin, you think she should not have to do the same 1099? Or if she is another kind of business and she gives a return to somebody and pays her rent in Bitcoin, should she not be giving a 1099 compared to what she pays in cash? I actually think it's good, because then it says crypto is a legitimate asset and it should be governed by the same mature rules, and governments don't think all people who touch crypto are money launderers. It's a real benefit to transact in crypto for speed, efficiency, lower cost, you name it, across many different asset classes, including I have a friend of mine who just got an AWS bill that was worth $50,000. He is transitioning to Filecoin and Videocoin. He can get it down to five, because crypto is replacing the traditional business functions that established it with their high and cost inefficient structures. Crypto and smart contracts greatly afford that, warrant that. And for the same reason, the mom and pop shop may have been threatened by e-commerce, and they certainly were threatened by that. But now, how many of us really embrace e-commerce, live by e-commerce, et cetera? So I'll stop talking.
Yeah, I'll jump in there. So, Perianne, you noted that there's been a large reaction from crypto Twitter, I'll say, and from anyone in the crypto space about this legislation. It was like very anti, pretty hostile right off the bat. And I think Senator Lummis also noted that a lot of this legislation was drafted in secret. There was no open practices for drafting this legislation. So I'm curious, and maybe Roger can speak to this as well. What does the legislation scene look behind? Like, what does it look like behind the curtain? How are they making these decisions? Like, how did they come to this $30 billion number? How did they come to this initial legislation that even lumps miners into the category of brokers? Because from anyone who's slightly educated in this space, that just seemed like so incorrect. And the fact that we had to have lobbyists on Capitol Hill to correct something that was seemingly so small in someone who's in the crypto space's mind, just to get that fact right, is really interesting. I'm just curious to know what it looks like behind the scenes.
Well, I mean, you mentioned the number. Where did they come up with that $28 billion number? Roger and I have spent some time talking about that over the past couple of days. So the Joint Committee on Taxation scored this, and they are not sharing how they came to that number. However, they typically don't. It's not like they're purposely hiding it just from us. They usually don't ever release it during these types of legislative activities. But a lot of this absolutely was put together by a very small group of people in the Senate. Between the Senate, the Joint Committee on Tax, as well as Treasury, definitely played a role in influencing what this looked like. There was not a formal process for the industry to participate. People from the industry were invited to weigh in. But there were other senators who were very much kept in the dark. So a lot of our champions throughout Capitol Hill did not, you know, get to be a part of this in ways that they wanted to. Again, that's not necessarily atypical. It's not like they're just singling the crypto space out. This really is pretty normal for kind of how these things come together. But, you know, what I can say is, you know, thank goodness we were there and we were able to respond so quickly. If we weren't, I honestly don't know what would have happened. And it's not just, you know, us being there and being present and be able to react really quickly. One of the things that made us so effective is that we've been thinking about these things for such a long time. And as I stated at the top of the call, we have a tax task force. Roger serves on our leadership committee. That group has convening on a very regular basis for years now. And we've been working on information reporting requirements for years, and we've been thinking about these topics. So when, you know, we get a call and we get the opportunity to come in and, you know, talk about our opinions on what this looks like, we already knew what our positions were because we developed them quite a long time ago. So if we hadn't been talking about these as an industry, if we didn't have an industry that wants to be compliant, that is proactively working to build and work in partnership with regulators to get frameworks that support the growth of this ecosystem, you know, again, I'm not sure what would have happened this past week, but we were prepared and we are ready. And this is not the first headwind we're going to have this year or with this administration. I think this is the very beginning. Chair Gensler gave a speech yesterday. I've been kind of going through it, going through this very large tax bill, but he outlines a whole bunch of other things we still have to talk about. How stable coins are going to be regulated or not, looks like we may have some, you know, very interesting power dynamics with specific to stable coins. You know, he specifically talked about DeFi platforms, other crypto trading platforms and lending platforms. So there's a lot of other regulatory things that are going to be worked through over the coming months. And we're ready to take those on as well.
So I don't want to sound too antagonistic, I guess, towards our legislators. You mentioned that we work in an industry that wants to be compliant, and nobody wants to like make extra trouble for themselves. We want to comply with, you know, laws and regulations that make sense. And I know I'm not really alone in this. Like when we saw this conversation about the infrastructure bill come up, sort of dovetailing off Will's question, the initial reaction for many was that this was, sure, in some part, maybe due to ignorance, but also maybe in larger part, like, let's stick it to miners or let's stick it to the crypto industry. Like, was this just like completely unintentional? Like this language that came into the bill, was it, you know, kind of a mistake, or was it kind of a rushed amendment that maybe had a little bit of like anti-crypto sentiment undergirding it that may need to be, you know, like you said, not the first headwind we've ever faced, not the last we'll face. Was it an accident or, you know, kind of something that may come from a little bit of an anti-crypto agenda that can be worked through in the future?
I know personally that they've been struggling with how to define what the scope is. And in reality, the prototypes of the world are, you know, the Coinbase, the Krakens, the Geminis of the world.
Yeah.
And to my knowledge, none of them issue 1099Bs historically. Next point. Then you go to decentralized exchanges, and they were struggling with how do they impose obligations there. And then you go to the other actors in the industry, like the node validators, the miners, the people who pay crypto interest. What about mining pools? And there are all these other issues that come up. And this is just, you know, a subset of them. Putting aside thing, you know, protocols that wrap things, et cetera, or the blockchains. There's so many different aspects. So they sought to, you know, write a rule, not necessarily focusing on custodians or others. And they thought this was a simple rule that they were writing, but not thinking about all the different verticals inside the ecosystem. And I think now that they are being educated on what those other verticals are, they're being responsive because they're saying, yeah, you're right. This, the miners are not really the right target, or the custodians of people's private keys are really not the right people that we should be asking for. Or those who develop the protocols themselves that are just software programmers really should not be picked in, kicked in. Those make sense. And I think now that that they had version 1.0 out, now they're going to others. And they have had many discussions with Perry Ann's organization and others to say, are we getting this right? You know, they're very, very good tax lawyers on those committees. That's what they do. They are not steeped in crypto. That's why they have an open door and want to be, quite frankly, educated and understand it in a way to make sense, that makes sense to them. And I think this is a step in the right direction. The first step to say, okay, we're going to require information reporting. Because if you have an asset class out there that people think there's tons of tax evasion around, that's not good for the ecosystem.
Yeah.
And people who were checking, yes, I have crypto, we're getting 1099Ks from certain exchanges that just show the gross amount with no real taxable income, we're getting adverse experience with tax audits. Because the IRS was thinking, oh, you've got gross income of X, like an Uber driver just gets a 1099K. And that's not the way the system works. So again, I come from somebody who serves traditional financial institutions. And to get that kind of money from the traditional institutions into this ecosystem, you have to have this kind of, I'll call it governance, in this way. Otherwise, you're going to have regulators putting out bad rules because they punish the 1% to 2% of people who are doing bad things, rather than the 98% of people who are using crypto for the things it was intended for and believe in the technology.
Sure. No, that makes perfect sense. It's, you know, maybe some growing pains that are more painful than other growing pains in the process. But like all the conversation and information you guys have shared so far is extremely reassuring, I guess is the best way to frame it. I want to put a little damper on that, though, with a question for all three of you. What's the worst case scenario? So you've made progress so far. You're having conversations constantly trying to change this language, like for miners in particular, but obviously the bill affects more than miners. Most of our audience is miners, so I'll limit it to them. Like, what's the worst case scenario if the language doesn't get all the way to the point where you want it to be or taken out altogether? And sort of in that scenario, what recourse do node operators, transaction validators, miners have sort of in that worst case scenario? Maybe Lee, and then go to Perry Ann, and then Roger. What are your thoughts on worst case scenario and recourse?
The worst case scenario is the Wyden-Toomey-Lummis amendment does not get added. And I don't think this is likely, but the IRS interprets miners within the definition of broker, and then you've got reporting requirements that are onerous and very difficult for miners. I highly doubt that even if the Wyden Amendment isn't added, that will be the way that it's interpreted, especially given the legislative guidance that Portman's staff put forward. The miners that are moving to the United States and to Texas specifically are investing hundreds of millions and billions of dollars in infrastructure. They're not going to just up stakes because, you know, this worst case scenario transpires. You know, mining is here to stay in the United States. It's going to be a boon to the U.S. economy. It's going to add jobs in rural areas that were not otherwise there. It's going to soak up power that was unused in rural areas, parts of the country that have excess power but can't get that power to the population centers of the country. So on all fronts, this is an incredible opportunity for the United States. And so even in the worst case scenario, I think you just have court battles around, you know, why miners are included in the definition of broker. But again, I'm going to listen intently to what Perry Ann has to say, because I think she's probably got some insights on this too.
Yeah, no, that seems like a pretty reasonable scenario. Like, I mean, there's a lot of legal recourse, I guess, and it seems like pretty reasonable to expect miners not to be considered as brokers. So they seem to have, like, it seems reasonable they'd have a pretty good case in court. Perry Ann, like, what do you think is the worst case scenario, and what options would people have in that scenario?
So for miners specifically, I think the miners are in a pretty good spot already. It is relatively ambiguous where the language is. If we got an amendment, that would make it explicitly clear, and that would be great. If the amendment does not pass, having legislative history would be the next best thing. And that's highly likely to happen. There's already been multiple senators who have gone on the record saying they would provide that. If for some reason that didn't happen, there's still an opportunity. This bill will have to go back to the House and pass in the House. So there's still opportunities to engage there. And then also once the House is done and once it's passed into law, there'll be a number of months available to work with IRS on the actual framework itself. And IRS has also made statements that they don't intend for minors to be included in the scope of this provision. So at this point, I think it's very unlikely that minors would be included into this provision. I mean, really everyone who has any position of authority over this bill has made statements saying it's not. So I think the risk there is pretty low. I mean, other things to include in how we think about this as well. But I think the risk at this point is very low.
Sure. Perry-Ann, I agree wholly with the way you approached it, the three-step, getting the statutory amendment, the colloquy, the legislative history, if that doesn't work, and then the regs. Most of the rules, the actual substantive rules around information reporting, are actually in the regulations. What asset classes that are subject to information reporting is actually specified in the regs. There's a couple other provisions, like when you transfer digital assets, you off an exchange, you'll have to do reporting there. That will be new. Could the IRS have authority to require that reporting now without a new statute? Unclear. But that is something that is clear now. So I agree that with Perry Ann, where she ended, that the action will be, and I think that'll be, the action will be with them, whether or not the amendment is included. The action will be with the IRS, because they are going to write rules. All of my interactions with them, the regulation writers, have been positive, because there is no sense that they are anti-crypto. There's no sense that they are hostile to the ecosystem. Their sense is that if people want to deal and transact in crypto, that's their business. But we're going to write rules that apply the same sort of mature reporting standards to any mature asset class. And I don't think there can be a maturation of crypto without governance by the SEC, the CFTC, and the IRS. Here, the whole focus has been the IRS. And I also want to say that wherever we do end up now in discussion around including miners as brokers, we're separately going to have that, because there's other provisions that are outside of this narrow provision, which is Section 6045, that deals with whether people were in mining pools, whether they're node operators, et cetera, and they're paying their delegators proceeds. There will be information reporting there. That is not being talked about. That is not subject to this legislation. And that same, all those same issues come out with, should there be information reporting, arise there, because those rules are big enough where they don't talk about asset class or nature of payments. They just apply for making payments to people. And they don't care about what you're paying. For the same reason that if Perianne is paying her contractors in Bitcoin, she's doing 1099 misses or NECs for that same thing. So there's lots of action to talk about. There's lots of things. And I think this is definitely headed in the right direction in terms of getting this pulled back to the breadth that it originally was.
So it's interesting, Roger. I wanted to ask you about something you just mentioned, sort of the anti-crypto sentiment from regulators, specifically IRS, given your work history there. I guess, like, I mean, it's common knowledge, people in crypto don't have a ton of faith or good grace for regulators in pretty much any agency. I'm curious though, like, in your mind, is sort of the general sentiment in the agency like pretty neutral, just like we have to regulate this like everything else, it's our job? Or is maybe there like a little bit of edge, a chip on their shoulder, I guess, against the crypto industry in general from some of the growing pains that have been experienced on both sides, specific to this latest bill and future guidelines on reporting and everything, but and also just in general, like what's your perspective on kind of that agency's disposition towards the industry as we talk about crafting new legislation and regulations and all of this?
The IRS's mission is to collect taxes that are due. If somebody believes that you don't have to pay tax on exchanging crypto for cash or crypto for crypto under the current law, they don't understand tax law, because there is no technical, there's just no technical basis to say I don't have to pay tax on my crypto income. You can argue about timing of staking rewards and when I have to include an income. There's legitimate debates to be had around that. I have my personal views, but putting that, or whether when I have to include my mining rewards and income, again, there's legitimate discussion to be had there because there is some uncertainty. But on the base, in the vast majority of transactions, there is no ambiguity. The IRS is just doing their job, which is their reason, their raison d'etre, if I can dip into French, is to collect taxes that are due. And if taxes are due on something and someone doesn't pay, that's not in the IRS's DNA to just walk away and say, don't worry about it. You look like a nice person. That doesn't happen. So their view is neutrally, and whether they didn't pay gain on stocks and bonds, income on tax on stocks and bonds, they didn't pay tax on crypto, they're going to approach you the same way. And I can honestly say in the near decade that I worked at the IRS, I never saw someone being result-oriented trying to use the power of the government to collect taxes that were not due. And when I was in a national office, we would never have supported that. And all of my interactions with examiners as well as rule writers, they've never been in a position to say, I'm just going to get this person who's dealing with crypto and they're doing something bad. Zero instance where I've seen that. In fact, to the contrary, I've seen IRS agents see gaps in data where an exchange went defunct and therefore the person can't get their trading records. And you could hit them with a zero cost basis because they can't prove their cost of the acquisition. I've seen the IRS actually go out of their way to try to help develop the case and find out facts, not necessarily to help the taxpayer because the taxpayer is a nice person, but because they want to get the right answer. And I think that's the kind of approach that I've seen. And as a taxpayer myself, that's what I'd expect to be from on the other end of that. So you know, a lot of this is about emotion of hating government, hating tax, or hating somebody's writing the rules. And if that's people's bent, then that's fine. But it's sort of like debating about what someone's favorite color is. If someone's favorite color is purple, you're not going to debate and change them otherwise. These are just my personal views and my experiences in engaging with the IRS and Congress on these issues.
Sure. So at the end of the day, pay your taxes and then we'll wait for the agency to sort of figure out the details of certain regulations.
And as a populace, if the community gets together and they want to write a statute that says gains on crypto should be tax exempt, which other countries do, for example.
I didn't know that.
For example, if you go crypto exchanges all day long, you don't pay tax. Yeah. In the Netherlands, if you're a trader, as long as you're not too active, all your income is exempt. Portugal, same thing. They don't tax capital gains on Singapore, same thing. So you can change the statute.
And this is why everyone's moving overseas.
And if that's what you want to do, then go for it. Then the IRS doesn't have to worry about crypto.
Have an impact on human behavior.
But change the law if that's what you want. And hey,
let's sign a petition.
If we're a democracy, change the law. Let's go for it.
Well, I think we are seeing the advocacy space mature and the education space mature. You know, the Digital Chamber, Blockchain Association. I was just on a call this morning with 24 different state associations, like the Texas Blockchain Council, from states all over the country, the large states like California, Florida, North Carolina, et cetera. So 5 years ago, very few of these organizations existed. And so now, you know, when the Digital Chamber needs to reach into a state and get in touch with a politician, they have a grassroots organization that's there on the ground that can put pressure on that person's voters, on that lawmaker's voters, to to at least listen and learn, because we really want their time. We don't want their vote. We want their time to educate them on this technology. And I do have to suggest that those that want to continue the policy conversation, join Perry Ann and I at the Texas Blockchain Summit. She's going to be a keynote speaker there, along with Senator Lummis and several other names that we've thrown around today in Austin on October 8th. So you can go to TexasBlockchainSummit.com or .org, excuse me, to find out more about that.
Love it. Kind of wrap-up question, at least on my end. Roger, interesting point you made earlier kind of spiked my interest, is just talking about the reporting requirements once you start getting to like the protocol level. So you mentioned like pools. Like, would the pool have to address all the questions that these agencies have, or would it be on the individual miners, or would it be on the validators or the exchanges running for validators? There's obviously like a lot of different addresses that the IRS can send a tax bill to. So I'm curious, just for the group, and maybe we can start with you, Roger, and then go Perry and finish with Lee, talking about what your expectations are for bills like this going forward. And maybe that is even just like over the next week, what are you guys expecting? And if you have a long-term projection on what this kind of bill would look like, that'd be interesting to myself at least. I think you're muted there, Roger.
Oh, apologies. Earlier in the discussion, Perry Ann mentioned some congressional studies. Actually, state that back. Regulator studies that looked at information reporting. There's something called the Government Accounting Office, another Treasury Inspector General, issued reports. And in those reports, the IRS analyzed that they had about 900 tax returns filed reporting crypto gains. I don't know how they determined that, but that's what the report said. And Coinbase was advertising publicly 30 million customers. Big difference between 900 tax returns. And that, those are just in the statistic is there with the 2017, 2015. So they're just seeing there, and they're criticized by the regulators, by their internal police, so to speak. Why aren't you doing something? In those same studies, they say when there's third-party information reporting, like your salary, like your bank account interest, like your brokerage accounts, the compliance goes up to 90%, 90 plus percent, that people pay the taxes due when there's that third-party information reporting. When there isn't third-party information reporting, the number goes well below 50. So this problem is not crypto-specific. It's any asset class where there's no checks and balance, no third-party reporting to make sure that there is the reporting. So that's the issue, not crypto. It's embedded into the system. So with that, and given the fact that the IRS commissioner has testified that there's a tax gap, meaning unpaid taxes, more than $1 trillion a year, $1 trillion a year. So that means the government needs to raise taxes on the people who do comply, because the people who owe and don't pay, government still needs that money, so they raise taxes on people who do. So there's going to be more information reporting because it's the easiest way for the IRS to audit somebody. If the third person who doesn't report has the obligation and they don't report, then they have to pay the tax. They have to pay basically a substitute tax. It could be withholding tax or a penalty per form, et cetera. It could be a variety of things. They have to pay that. This is the kind of thing that there'll be more of. It's an easy audit. It's highly effective in motivating people to pay the taxes due. It's highly effective in allocating government resources because the IRS has, I don't know, 10,000 or so agents. Don't quote me on that, but it's something around there who actually may audit people. But there's 350 million Americans and maybe 170 million taxpayers. They need electronic means and information reporting to audit, not only to validate what's due, but also to prioritize the returns and see who's going to get additional love in the audit process. That's the kind of thing. So there's going to be a lot more of this because it's the way governments prefer to audit around the world.
Sure. Yeah, no, that makes total sense. I can't thank all three of you enough for the conversation. It's been super fun, educational for me. And based on the chat, I know they've had fun also. I guess last question to wrap up, like you guys have offered some pretty reassuring and insightful commentary on like high level regulatory stuff affecting the whole industry, but also drafting this, revising the amendment, the crypto section of this bill, pushing the amendment forward. Where do we go from here? Like we're all on Twitter watching the conversation around this, a bunch of people watching this live stream, like over the next, is it 24 or 48 hour period? Like what should we be watching for? What should we sort of expect coming from the Hill?
You know, one thing that we've done is started a calling campaign to Senator Cornyn's office to say, hey, can you have a conversation with your Republican colleagues, you know, with Portman and Toomey? And so if you're at wherever state you are, you know, first look and see if your senator was going to support the bill in the first place, because if they were, they're going to have more leverage, and then call that office and let your voice be heard. That's my perspective from a state level.
Sure. Perry Ann, what should we be watching for?
Yeah, definitely watch to see what happens with these amendments. In the meantime, I would definitely consult your tax counsel and ask them what your information reporting requirements are. I think part of this has brought in a lot of awareness to certain companies do have requirements, and the IRS is going to be paying attention to this very closely going forward. So if you're not buttoned up in that area, now's the time to do it.
Perfect. Well, thank you all so much. That's a wrap for the live stream. It'll be reviewable for anyone who tuned in late on YouTube and other platforms. But Perry Ann, Roger, Lee, thank you all so much for your time. Really appreciate it.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks, guys. Yeah, Will, Zach, appreciate it, man.
Thank you so much.
See y'all in.
See you in Texas.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. See you in Texas.
Yeah. I should have said that Compass is sponsoring too. I didn't know if the paperwork had gone through, but I think it has. So I should have said that on the live stream.
I'll be there with my Bitcoin hat.
There we go.
All right.
Perfect. Love it.